I want to take a minute to note that this podcast on stress and anxiety was recorded just before the corona pandemic hit. The information could be really helpful for parents who are navigating this stressful situation with their kids. In the podcast, however, though, when we are talking about school-related stressors, feel free to shift that in your mind to current at-home stressors that your child may be facing in terms of homeschooling, loss of routine, inability to see friends, grief that goes with end of special events that they were looking forward to in school. All of that is still applicable to the current at-home stressors that we talk about in terms of children's coping. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to our Wonders and Worries podcast series. This is Julie May, Child Life Specialist at Wonders and Worries. We are changing our format a little and bringing on some new voices and faces here at Wonders and Worries to come and share our information and knowledge with you. Today, I have a fellow colleague with me, Corinne Barnacle. And Corinne, why don't you introduce yourself?
Oh, hey, Julie. Thanks, work sister. I'm Corinne Barnacle. I am a certified child life specialist here at Wonders and Worries. And I'm also kind of a hybrid colleague. I'm also a licensed marriage and family therapist associate and part-time private practice. Thanks for having me.
We're so glad you're here. Okay. Similarly to other podcasts that we've done, we're going to be focusing on a specific topic that I think a lot of us as parents really do face and kind of can struggle with in terms of our children. Our focus today is on all things anxiety and fear and stress in children. So with that means we're going to be discussing kind of how that looks in a family system and what the difference is between the anxiety or fear or stress and different tools that we can help with working through that, what things have worked well for us. Corinne's going to take you through a lovely model that we love and just kind of start that process and get things going. Perfect. So kind of getting started, let's talk a little bit, first of all, about the difference between fear and anxiety.
Right. So, Julie, I think a lot of people get these two confused, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So a lot of times I love examples and visuals because they help me. So the visual or example that I would love to give to y'all is think about when you're sitting in a room with someone, the way we explain fear is if, you know, there's a spider like on the wall, right in your sight, right near you, could jump on you. That's fear. But then if I'm in a room with a kiddo or somebody and I say, you know, when you walk outside of the office, you know, there was a spider hanging out by the door. He could still be there, but he might not be there. And if anxiety is when you are thinking that, you know, future tense, so you can't go back to our conversation because your brain takes you to the future. Well, what if I walk outside? What if he's there? Where is he hiding? And those are kind of an example of the two differences. Fear is present, like in the moment, and then anxiety is future tense.
Now, do they come from the same origins within your body, or do you feel like they're located in different spaces?
Right. So, you know, fear is a physiological response, and it feels like you're like in real danger. It's present based, and fear is within your limbic system, which is part of your brain. And a lot of people have heard of the, you know, the fight, flight, or freeze response. I'm sure you've heard
Absolutely.
Of that, right? So fear is essentially, another good example is Dr. Dan Siegel. We use this a lot with kids and with parents too, for doing some psychoeducation with them. So a lot of times what I do is if everyone puts their hand up like a five, and then if you tuck your thumb under, like you're holding up a four, and then you place it over, we talk a lot with kids around flipping your lid, you know, when you get super frustrated or angry, you just flip it. Mm-hmm. And so what we tend to do is talk about how your amygdala, which is the part of your brain, which is like your watchtower, it's always on alert, scanning for safety or like, am I safe? Am I not safe? And when your brain gets anxious, that amygdala starts to get irritated and you start flipping your lid and you're not able to think through things like you should be able to. And part of our job as child life specialists is to make sure we can find ways to make sure your lid goes down and you keep that brain and your limbic system calm.
And I think of as parents, you've probably had that moment where you have a child that maybe has had a night terror or is really afraid in a moment, and you just, they seem almost inconsolable because they are so upset that they do not respond to logic. They do not respond to reason. Mm-hmm. All of their fears and concerns are deep within, and they're at a spot that they're not even in a place to reason. So before we can do the work of calming ourselves or encouraging our child to calm themselves, we have to first of all get their limbic system back online. And by doing that, we have to find that way to calm them down and unflip their lid so that we can engage the other parts of our brain that work with our thought processing and our problem solving and our speaking and using our words. And while we don't have a fix for every specific situation, we do have some tried and true methods that we have found that can really help and work. Kind of going back and explaining fear versus anxiety, Corinne did an incredible job explaining about fear and kind of touched a little bit on anxiety being more future-based and more global and maybe not even specifically something that's happening right in the moment. The biggest part about anxiety that we also see is that it engages different components of the brain. So fear is that amygdala and in the limbic part of your system, whereas with anxiety, you're looking at more of a global part, engaging our cortex or our cerebrum part of the brain. It's not just physiological. It does have physiological components, but it also touches on our behavioral, our emotional, and our cognitive responses. And then that kind of takes us into a little bit about stress.
Yeah, I'm sure we all know what that word is and use it a lot with your kids and as parents. And so a lot of times, you know, we just want to get a grasp from our kids, like what stresses us out? Mm-hmm. And, you know, what is stressful to a child these days? And usually, I don't know, Julie, if you agree, but a lot of times kids just tell me like school.
Oh, yeah. Or how was your day? And your kid clearly is not looking like they've had a good day, or they've kind of shut down, or they're immediately just kind of going into their quiet space. And you say, how was your day? And you get, it's fine. And so in kind of looking about that and kind of figuring out with stress, it helps to understand that stress is our body's response to fear. So stress is how we react. It's what causes us to maybe be angry or maybe have more increased anxiety. For some kids, it causes them to have headaches or belly aches or sweatiness or just overall exhaustion. You might see a child yawning a lot, and that may not be exactly because they're tired. It could be a body's response to stress. So we've touched a lot on the difference between fear and anxiety at a most basic form, but now we want to kind of move in and talk about what that looks like in your home and maybe for your different children. Obviously, here at Wonders and Worries, we work a lot with families that have chronic and ongoing illnesses. Mm-hmm. So there are some components of a child's stress, if it's related to their parents' illness, that we cannot fix. And so some of that is trying to figure out what tools and what levels of support can we give them to help them navigate their feelings without being able to take the stressor away. Is that right, Corinne?
Yeah, Julie, that's right. And me just thinking through an example, because I love them with some of our families, if they have a caregiver or a parent at home who's really sick and ends up having to go to the hospital a lot. You know, I have some kids that are at school and have a hard time focusing because their anxiety kicks in, right, when they're taking a test.
Absolutely.
So I have, you know, one client who is afraid her dad will get taken away in an ambulance. So whenever she hears an ambulance, she's always like, oh my goodness, it could be my dad. And then her anxiety kicks in and she has a really hard time focusing back to her work.
So it's almost like a triggered response from an external stimuli.
Correct. And so we work a lot on mindfulness practices. So when she notices that her body reacts and she has that physiological response, what can we do to get back into the present? And everyone knows about mindfulness. It's a big topic and word. I think that a lot of practices are being built into schools, and they're wonderful tools that we can teach kids, and parents need to know them also to kind of help themselves.
Yeah. And we're going to be walking you through some different internal and external mindfulness, as well as some specific activities or conversations that you can have with your families Kind of in looking at conversations, I think it helps first to be on the same emotional vocabulary when you are working as a family, and we have some good ideas and tools towards that, where it's just a chance of setting that space to get on the common language.
Right. I love language. It's one of my favorite things to work with families and kind of help create if they don't have it. But I think as parents, you know, knowing your emotional vocabulary in your home and how you use feelings, and do you just talk about happy feelings or do you talk about negative ones like being angry and, you know, sad? And are those things as a parent you're comfortable sharing, or do you tend to protect yourself and don't share that because you don't feel like your kids should see that? When we really think you have to model those emotions for kids, because how are they going to know to deal with that if you're not kind of dealing with it with yourself?
Absolutely. And one of the biggest things that I hear back from some of my families is that the parents themselves are worried about adding to their child's stress by being vulnerable or by showing their emotions and concerns. Sometimes it's about the illness, but other times just in daily life, if they're having a hard day or they're feeling frustrated, feeling comfortable showing that in an appropriate way and letting their child into that so the family can kind of cope as a whole. Corinne, do you have any information kind of about how that works?
Well, just thinking about, you know, we try to paint pictures for kids and fill in the gaps, because sometimes there's a lot of gaps to be filled. So if a parent's having a moment, which you all do at certain points of like frustration, you know, if that child doesn't know what's frustrating you, they may take that on and think they've done something and they think they're the problem. And then a behavior will pop out from a kiddo and then you're like, where did that come from? And just taking a step back and knowing how you co-regulate with your child and making sure you're on a level that you can regulate your own body and your response. So it models to them that this is important.
Absolutely. And one of the things that we always tell parents, you know, there's a reason on an airplane they tell you to put on your own oxygen mask first. If you don't self-regulate yourself or take care of yourself, you are not going to be able to take care of these little people in our lives who look to us for that guidance and support. So it's about setting those standards. Also, it's about recognizing, am I able to regulate myself in a way that I need to support my child, or do I need to take some time? Do I need to revisit this conversation later at a time where I'm more rested or when my emotions are more in check, or maybe I am feeling a little bit more comfortable in supporting somebody else? And it's okay if that time is not right now. I can tell you many times as a parent, I have had to say, you know, this is not going to happen for us right now. I need to first calm my body down and revisit this conversation later, because I am not going to be able to keep my limbic system from flipping my lid. I'm not going to be able to model those behaviors for my child that need to be modeled. And I think that it's okay to give ourselves permission to say, I am not in a place right now to bring my best self. So I'm going to step back, kind of regroup, and come at it from a different angle. So kind of some of the things that we want to talk about with children is they do respond to stress in different ways based on their age or developmental level. And we really do like to touch on, for your kids that are, you know, preschool aged and small, or maybe early elementary and they're coming home from school or coming home from daycare or preschool and they're just melting down about, you know, what's for dinner, or not liking the cup you picked out, or feeling frustrated with bedtime routines or what pajamas they have to wear, and kind of all those end of day stresses oftentimes are not even actually about that need for control in that exact moment. Sometimes it stems from so many parts of the day based on overstimulation, or for our chronic ill families, our families with chronic illness, what we see oftentimes is day-to-day looks very different. And so it was a chemo day for mom or dad, and that parent that normally is maybe more awake and involved is having to rest. And so already there's that shift in the house where it's not the norm that this child has come to regulate upon. Also just looking at, you know, is there a family member in town visiting to help take care of somebody, or is there somebody who's picked up the child from school that normally doesn't drive them home? Because as we all know, everyone is going to do it different. And we all kind of feel nobody does it as good as us. And so it's about trying to find how we can deregulate that stress early on in the child's day and working on it in the terms of a child that's smaller. So one of the biggest things that we have found is carving out some time when the child comes home for some play.
I love play.
I love play too.
Play is so fun. All you playmakers out there, we love you. Yeah, so Julie, you know, I went to a conference earlier this week, and the speaker told me, she made a really bold statement, and she said, play disarms fear.
Oh, I love that concept.
Yeah, it just disarms it. So when a child is in a fear state or an anxious state, you know, kind of co-regulating with them and meeting with them on a space that they can handle, play is a wonderful tool to use. And you don't have to have amazing tools around. All you have to have is simple things like Play-Doh, bubbles. She even had a feather, which every parent can carry around in their purse. And all we did was sit down on the ground. And a lot of parents were like, oh, this is a really good idea. And they were just blowing it back and forth to one another. And what that did is it helped regulate that kiddo's body.
Absolutely, with breathing too.
With breathing, and it's fun. Mm-hmm. So we incorporated laughter. Mm-hmm. And so when kids can incorporate that part of their brain where they're laughing and having a good time, it just helps regulate the body, and it helps the parents too.
Oh, I absolutely love that tool. Yeah.
So carrying around a feather, it's wonderful.
Also incorporating sensory play into your home environment. If you're cooking dinner, and you can take a container, a Tupperware container, and fill it with rice. You know, just dump full bag. It doesn't have to be colored. It doesn't have to be fun. Just rice or little pasta shells or something that your child can just sit there and manipulate while you visit about the day. You might find that they start to be more engaged and more purposeful in their responses because they're having that sensory input that's just calming all of those nervous system and helping them feel like they're much more online.
Yeah, I love that we're talking about sensory stuff, Julie, because even as an adult, you know, I don't like the dentist, so I typically bring a stress ball and squeeze, and that helps keep me online and not go into my own anxiety.
So then kind of looking at our middle school age group of kids, so these kids in 6th and 7th and 8th grade who get off the bus or you pick up from school and they're coming home and they're just ready to like roar and like yell at you or give you some serious side eye. And how can we help get them regulated and back online? And so some of the things that we have found is it's a lot easier when you first of all start with giving them that space.
Right. Yeah. Middle school is intense. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of changing of classes and loud voices and just drama that's not always involved in elementary school with everybody.
Middle school kids move around a lot more. I know in elementary school you pretty much so switch maybe once in the day, maybe twice, but other than that you're in a very predictable environment with similar routines. But in lots of middle schools, you're switching every 45 minutes to another classroom with other kids and having to conform to the stressors of that space and get online quickly so you can pay attention. And then 45 minutes later, it's disrupted.
Right. So I know a lot of times parents will come to me and say, well, they get in the car after I pick them up. And then that's where tension happens and we get in a fight. And I go, what happened? Well, they got in the car and they put their headphones on and they didn't answer any of my questions. And I'm like, well, let's pause on that and think, why did that happen? Well, sometimes, you know, whenever we're overwhelmed, we want to get on our phone and have our music on and have our me time. And maybe your middle schooler just needs that time when they get in the car not to be bombarded with, how was your day? Did you get your homework done? How did science go? Like, it's too overwhelming. Yeah.
I'm sure some of you have heard the concept of hangry. And I definitely have one kiddo of my 4 that just, you know, he needs his meal. He needs to have some food, you know, navigating the cafeteria with all the social seating and who to talk to and what to do. And sometimes he does not eat very well at lunch. And so his blood sugar has kind of bottomed out and he gets home and just giving him that space to pick a snack and to kind of be on his own. Sometimes that's in the form of gaming. Sometimes that's in the form of going up to his room or listening to his music on his headphones. some time to just give him that space, I often find that that and a snack can be the perfect combination.
Yeah, I love snacks. They make me happy.
Me too.
Yeah.
So kind of also looking at our early adolescence and moving into kind of those kids that are in high school age, where maybe their days are definitely much longer. We know that developmentally kids in this age group oftentimes need more sleep, but due to the demands of their day, being at school all day and extracurriculars and time with friends and then homework, and that they're oftentimes not getting the amount of sleep that their body needs. So that right there is setting them up for a space of feeling stressed or feeling like maybe they don't have the capacity to be able to handle their emotions or feelings.
Yeah, and I think sometimes adolescents, they get a really bad rap. You know, if you think of adjectives to describe them, a lot of times it's lazy, hormonal, sometimes those types of negative adjectives, and they...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I hear parents say, well, you know, I feel like here I am with an illness and my kid just wants to spend time with their friends.
Right. And as we know, as developmental specialists, that is on par and normal to be more seeking more independence and having more social time. And that being really important in this age group. And it's not that they don't care about that parent, but it's they're on target for where they should be developmentally.
Our goal as parents and as a child life specialist is we would like for our children that we're supporting to be trending on some of those more normal patterns of development as much as they can. So a teen wanting to spend time with their friends or maybe confiding more about their personal struggles with their friends is absolutely normal.
Yeah.
And it's hard because we want to know that our kids are okay. And it's hard because we want to connect with them and we want them to choose to want to be with us because we want to be with them. And it's about finding that balance of knowing that even though they're stressed, even though they're anxious, they still care for us. They just need that time to get with their friends, to maybe play a game online, or to maybe get on Instagram or scroll through TikTok or, you know, whatever app or device they're using, just to be able to unplug and feel connected with people their age so that they can get back online and be a part of your family system in a way that's supportive.
Right. Oh, TikTok.
Oh, TikTok.
Yeah.
So now looking at kind of, we talked through the development, we talked through the difference between fear and anxiety. So now we're kind of looking at what specific tools do we have in able to help regulate for families and children. We kind of come at this from a twofold. We look at it in terms of what can we do internally in our body to help ourselves calm. And I know that Corinne talked a little bit about mindfulness. Mindfulness is a huge part of calming, and it's very much a topic in normal conversation now in the workplace, at schools. I feel like we are starting to move as a culture to make an impactful, more of an intentional focus on setting some space for mindfulness in their everyday environment. Corinne has a great activity she's going to walk you through. We call it our 5-4-3-2-1, and she's going to take you through that as if you were the one doing this mindfulness activity. So first of all, everybody, if you're listening to this driving, or if you are at home, or maybe you have headphones on in your workplace, or maybe you're currently getting chemo right now and you're just tuning in, first of all, let's start by taking a deep breath. Breathe in and just breathe out. And Corinne is going to take you through this mindfulness.
Lovely. I feel like I'm on my calm app and I'm one of the narrators. Okay. So this mindfulness activity, I just want you to put your chair wherever you're sitting, lean your back into it and have your feet on the ground and be aware of where your hands are. I like to kind of just put mine like on the top of my thighs and make sure they're relaxed. And so how you can do this with a child is, you know, pick somewhere where you can sit. And then think about how we set this up. So this is a sensory mindfulness activity. So I'm going to say, okay, can you tell me out loud 5 things that you see in the room? And then make them say, well, I see that red chair, and be descriptive. I see that black folder. And they have to go through it and name 5 things they see. And then I go, okay, well, can you think of 4 things that you hear right now? and they really have to think about it, and like their eyes are going to go up and they're going to start trying to get those senses to kick in. Oh, well, I hear the dog barking. Oh, great. Okay, what else do you hear? All right, I hear you talking. Yep, you hear me talking. After you do those four, then you say, what are three things that you feel? And this is when you can kind of help them out. Like, well, I don't feel anything. And they go, well, you put your hands on the table. I feel how rough this table is. And then they might put their hand on their shirt. Oh, my shirt's really soft. I feel how soft my shirt is. And then you switch to number two. Can you name me two things that you smell? And they start, you know, putting that nose up and sniffing. Oh, I smell the peanut butter kind of on my fingers that I had for lunch. Great. And then if they're like, well, I can't think of anything I smell, then I say, well, what are your favorite smells? Name two. And then lastly, you go to, what is one thing that you can taste? Well, I don't taste anything. Well, what's one thing that you really love to taste? Oh, I love to taste strawberries. Great. And so what you're doing is you're having them go back online in their prefrontal cortex. And the 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, you're helping them count. And so they're having to be mindful of what number they're on, because you don't want them just to name 10 things that they see. You want them to name 5.
Yeah. I use this tool. It's one of my absolute favorite, and I use this a lot with kids who are maybe at school and they're not at a place where they can really escape their current environment. Mm-hmm. Internal coping resources are huge for that, because you really oftentimes just need yourself. It comes from within. So you're able to, even in your head, say, okay, 5 things that I see. If I'm in a busy gym and I'm at a school pep rally and I'm feeling overwhelmed by the noise and stressed by the sound, and I'm not allowed to carry my phone with me and my parents ill, and I'm worried if something happens, how will I know? All of these stresses that our kids have to hold on to. Using this grounding exercise and going through those steps and motions gets them out of their head, back into the present, to be able to then be back online and use some more of their coping tools to help their body calm. So kind of in looking at that, we also need to look at some external resources, and we won't bore you with all of them because there are so many tremendous ones. But some of my personal favorite for our family, we do a lot of movement activity. Using your body, we love to have dance parties. Sometimes we just put on that music when we're making dinner and homework is getting started, and that way that noise doesn't get filled with my children fighting. Instead, it gets filled with just certain kids listening to songs. One might be singing along, one might be just listening, two might be dancing in the kitchen while we're making dinner, just kind of moving into using an external component of the music to help shift the whole feeling in the household. Another great plan that we kind of talk about with kids in school is coming up with a safety plan. I was working with a teenager this week, and she told me that one of her biggest stressors is if something happens to her caregiver who is ill, to her mom, how will she be able to know? She's at a school where, as a high school student, they are not allowed to carry their phones during the day. So it became about, what ways can we communicate to her if something goes wrong and mom has to go to the hospital, this is who will come and tell me. And at school, we call that a school safety plan, but it's something that you can even make within your own family household. What is our family safety plan? Or what is the time of the week that we are all going to come together the same time every week as much as we can for that predictability and that consistency? What is a plan that we can put in place where we use that as a time to talk about something good that happened in our week? Maybe something that was really hard in our week. Maybe some sort of worry that we have. At Wonders and Worries, we have a great tool that we use, and we talk about what our wonders are. So maybe what's something I'm curious about right now? What's something I'm curious about, maybe mom's illness? What's something I'm curious about for this week? What's something that I'm curious about regarding for something I want to do? And then also looking at it from the direction of, well, maybe what is something that I'm worried about? What is maybe a feeling or a concern that I'm holding close to my heart that I haven't said out loud? For maybe our teenagers that don't want to say out loud, where is a space that I can write that down and store that so that I can get it out of my body? Different things like that can help with those external tools to help us cope and process and get back online.
Wow. I love those examples, Julie, especially the dance party.
Big fan of dancing.
Yeah, because obviously music helps us. And I feel like through all the ages, you know, it gets your body moving. Teens love it because they love the lyrics and we can get really into that. Some other helpful examples of external coping skills that parents, you can just have like in your toolbox within like your purse to kind of bring heighten the senses. Gum. Gum is a big one because if a child's having a hard time, you can say, okay, let's pop some gum in your mouth. You can blow some bubbles. You know, you smell it in your olfactory. You can have some lotion and you can kind of set it up. Oh my goodness, sometimes when I get stressed, I put this lotion on my hands and I smell it and it just makes me feel better. Do you want to try some? And just showing and modeling those simple things that can be great tools just to grab and have in your back pocket.
Absolutely. And while we would love to say that we are 100% successful at all times, we know the reality is you're going to find some tools that work for your child and other tools, maybe that same tool doesn't work for a different kid in your family or a different child that you're connected with through either your job or through a friend's child. We all respond to things uniquely. So it's about finding what works for your child and finding what works for your family. But just know that through all of this, if we can find a way to calm our systems, get back online, take our own personal temperature and set up a space to let our child have that time to deregulate and calm our bodies and get back online, then we're going to also set the stage for being able to utilize some of these awesome tools that we've talked about today. As always, thank you so much for tuning in.
Yes, thank you for having me, Julie.
You're so welcome. And I look forward to getting to bring another podcast series to you here soon. Until then, just know with wonders and worries, we will together.